Going Linux, episode 241, Computer America, number 72. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And here's your co-host, Charles Tendell.
Oh, gee, you barely made it. What's going on?
Well, I was trying to click the button, but for some reason the Hangout was blinking, and I'm like, why are you blinking? So I was kind of fixated on that for a second.
Yeah, and something's wrong with our chat room, too. I'm not sure what's going on, but I... Yeah, the chat room, I think, I should have known. I updated the chat room for security. They had a security update for the chat room, and I think it blew up. So, I hadn't checked it for a little bit, and
I win. I'm in here.
Are you in there? Okay. Well, I'm gonna re-log back on and see how that goes. But welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Computer America Show, and I'm your host Craig Crossman. And as I said, okay, now I'm back in the chat room, and I see everybody, and I'll go back in there and say hi, guys. There you go. All right, there we go. And Charles, you're in the chat room. I set it so when you go in the chat room, it defaults to you being in the chat room, okay, which is fine. Now, they just had a security update for Java, and I always tremble when that happens because usually they break something when they do that, and might have broken, but I'm going to say hi, all. Hi, Addison. Hi, Jack. Okay, so it's we got a lot of people in there. What do you mean, iThug? You're an iThug?
No. When I came into the chat room, Jonathan said iThug Charles underscore Charles. Yeah. So I changed my nick to an iThug underscore Charles.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
Jonathan did it, and I was like, okay.
Okay. I just said hello to Jonathan. Well, welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Computer America Show. Got a great show planned for you tonight, as always. And tonight, it's going to be our All Linux Show. That's right. Everything you want to know about Linux and more, we have the answers for you here tonight on the program. So, let's see. Did we get everything in place?
I don't know. Did you?
We should introduce our guest, I guess. What do you think?
I'm not sure we should do that.
No, just let him hang out there in the Hangout?
I mean, he should just hang out. I mean, it is a Hangout. So hanging out in the Hangout, I think, is appropriate.
Yeah.
And besides, he's got a dirty little secret this evening that is why his setup is malfunctioning. So we'll call him out on that one.
Well, it's the third Tuesday of the month. And that means it's time for Linux. The Linux operating system continues becoming more and more popular. Yeah, Charles uses it. I use it. It's an important operating system, so every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How the heck are you?
I'm doing just fine. Yeah, well, my hardware is malfunctioning here, but
how is it malfunctioning?
Yeah.
I know exactly what the problem is.
Oh,
you do.
I do.
Can I fix it without getting off of Google Hangouts? We'll describe what the problem is in a second. But what is it?
It's because you're running OS X.
OS X.
You're
I got two birds with one stone.
Well, you're right. I'm trying to use the camera on my Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a Mac.
That is my deal.
It sounds like he's apologizing because you have a Mac. Oh my God, yeah.
I am.
He runs going.
It's no longer an all Linux show. I'm running the chat room on Linux. I'm running the show notes on Linux. I'm running the recording on Linux, but I am not running the video on Linux, and apparently I'm not running it on OS X either.
Yeah. Well, is it the one that's built into the Mac? Do you have an iMac?
Yes. Actually, I have a MacBook Air.
Okay, you have a MacBook Air, and the camera's not responding?
I go into the settings for Google Hangouts, and it's grayed out.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
That might take me out of Google Hangouts.
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
I guarantee it will.
Yeah. It might.
You know, I have to confer with you because I do for the show and for the show only. I also I've got to do something before this goes stupid. I forgot that I've got my audio piped correctly, but I also for just the show run.
Uh-huh.
Mac Mini to do the show stuff.
Okay.
But I can still justify it, and you can still say you are running a Linux operating system because
it is
based on
Linux.
Yeah.
Well, Unix actually, but yes, exactly. So I'm not sure why it isn't working because we're looking at a penguin right now, which is fine. I mean, but you know, we'd certainly like to see what you look like.
Our honorary guest.
Yeah, Tux is that.
Yeah.
Well, now here's the thing. I gave all the phone numbers, how to contact us. We'd love to hear from you. But what we always ask Larry to do is give us a topic or a suggestion to talk about. Now, you can also follow along with us. If you go to our homepage at computeramerica.com, okay, and you go under the archives pull-down menu, you'll see it says show notes. Just click on that. And it says click here to read the show notes, and it'll come up with today's date, April the 15th. And which is also, I guess, tax day. Going Linux podcast.
Hey.
Yeah, you see the link to the Going Linux podcast, and then you'll see two links below that. You see Larry Bush, everything's there, and you'll see the show notes and emails. If you click on the show notes link, it'll open up a Google Docs document, and you can follow along with us all the different things, the topics of that. And the topic we have selected. I've actually had Larry select for us tonight is no, we don't need a drum roll.
Not that dramatic.
No. Everything I learned about switching from Windows to the Mac, I learned from Linux.
Because it's just better.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Everything I learned about switching from Windows to the Mac, I learned from Linux. So there he is. So that's a topic that we're going to be doing tonight. And again, you can follow along there, from our show notes page at Computer America. If you're on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Computer America, we also have the links there as well for you. So you can look at them and follow along with us there as well. So that's all the mechanisms that you can kind of interact with us. You know, we've got the chat room going. We've got all that. So I guess let's just start the ball rolling here. And again, everything I learned about switching from Windows to the Mac, I learned from Linux. And so why don't you start with with this, Larry? I mean, that's a heck of a statement to make, you know?
Well, it is. It is. And the reason I have this MacBook Air sitting in front of me and the reason I picked this topic is because in March, last month, I changed jobs and I changed employers.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah,
well, that Google Docs is just, people are just piling in to watch this, so that's nice to see that. Okay.
Well, they can follow along, right, with the show notes.
Yes,
right,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
So they can make sure that I stick to the notes and don't draw, which I'm wanting to do from time to time. But because I changed jobs, that means I got to choose a new work laptop. And that's exactly what I did. And after years and years and years of using Windows at work, because they didn't use anything but Windows at work, my choices with this new employer were a Dell laptop with Windows or a Mac laptop with OS X. Or as Charles was saying,
Air?
Yeah. So I picked the MacBook Air. And so now I'm using a Mac for the first time in my life. And obviously, I don't know how to get the camera working, but we'll get it for the next show, I guess, or maybe at the break or something. But I picked the MacBook Air, and this is the first time I've used OS X or any sort of Mac. I've had my hands on Mac computers. This is the first time I've actually used one for real work. And now that just allows me to speak firsthand about switching from the Mac to Linux, as opposed to all my experience in switching from Windows to Linux, having now used OS X for a little bit at least. I can now speak about a little more authoritatively about what it takes to switch from Mac to Linux. And what I found is that there are more similarities, many, many, many more similarities to the way OS X works and Linux works than there are between the way Windows works and Linux works. And so I was able to switch easily to the Mac from Linux because I knew how just about everything worked. The things that I don't know how to work are the things that you can't tweak, or the things that I haven't figured out how to tweak. Like, how do I find out what is consuming my camera and is not letting Google Hangouts pick it up?
Well, Larry, do you spend a lot of time in the Linux command line?
Yeah, a little bit of time, yeah.
Then you'll get comfortable with this one. So you know where the Finder is, right? The little blue,
yes,
the blue face,
yes,
there. Go into Applications.
Okay.
Okay. Scroll down to the bottom of Applications and double click on Utilities.
Are you taking me to the terminal?
I am, sir.
Oh, I've got a shortcut on the dock to the terminal. You got to be kidding! I've already done it. I got the terminal open. There you go. I've even got a transparent black background and white text. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So
classic Linux style.
All right. That was pretty much it. That's where I was headed. I was like, you can find out a lot through there.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll worry about the camera later. But, so not surprisingly, Linux and OS X share the same Unix origins. And so there are a lot of similarities in the way that they're set up, and we can talk a little bit about some of those similarities. And since we're all Mac users here, and as Craig, you alluded to in the introduction, we're all Linux users as well, we can probably all talk about this. And I don't know about the chat room, but
I'm in the chat room. You know what I've done is I think there's a problem with the new chat update. When I try to float the window, it has a problem. So basically, I just resize the browser window without actually floating it, and it seems to be working fine. So I'll just have to.
All right, I always open it up in a new tab and put that new tab in a new window.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing, basically. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
All right.
So, when we talk about similarities between the Mac and Linux, which makes it very easy for somebody to switch from the Mac to Linux, you're talking about some areas that are almost identical. For example, the settings panel. So in Linux, depending on which version of Linux you're in, there will be a way to get into settings. And I'm using Linux Mint, the Cinnamon desktop.
Oh, yeah. More and more I see the similarities between Mint and OS X, and I'm like, wow, here we go.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? So you open up system settings on Linux, and you open up, let's see, you click on the little apple, and you go to system preferences in OS X, and it's laid out just about the same. There are little sections, and in Linux they're labeled. In Mac, you have to figure out what the section is, I guess. But they are kind of logically laid out, and even the icons are the same or very similar. The sound setting icons in some versions of Linux, depending on the icons you've chosen, are almost identical. The displays can be identical. In Linux you've got mouse and trackpad combined into a single setting, whereas in OS X you've got the mouse and you've got a trackpad as a separate settings icon there. But the network, it's almost identical. So I was able to switch over into the Mac without any trouble at all when it comes to settings, except that although there appear to be more icons on OS X in the settings panel than there is in Linux Mint in the Cinnamon panel, there are more areas to tweak on the Linux settings than there are in OS X. You open just about anything, and there may appear to be just as many settings, but you find that on OS X, some of those settings are a little more rudimentary, and so there are several settings separated out in OS X where they may be combined in Linux Mint. If I were using the KDE desktop in Linux, I would probably have 100 times more settings than I have in Linux Mint. But so that's one of the areas where there are similarities is in the settings.
Okay.
And I just wanted to kind of highlight that. And,
well,
of course, for users who have been using the Mac for a long time, this is not news. It's news to me because I'm new to OS X. So it's all, you know, unicorns and rainbows, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that they let you use the most polished version of Linux or as I was corrected in the chat room, Unix out there, but they didn't give you the opportunity to do to run a Linux laptop, which is inherently more secure than just about every other bastardized operating system or variant of Unix out there. So it's interesting how companies do that. But I know the one reason why they do that is because they don't get to remotely manage it. Like on your Mac, they probably installed a VNC. They probably installed some sort of Norton or some sort of commercial antivirus for the organization or something like that to where they can actually manage the computer remotely. And they haven't figured out how to do that. Well, they haven't figured out how to do that point and click wise for your average admin on a Linux machine.
Well, you know, strangely enough, the OS X laptop that I have is centrally managed by the company, as you suggested, and so they can wipe it. They've got a VPN for me to log into, and they've got, you know, some what Windows would call policy settings. I don't know what it's called on OS X, but it is centrally managed that way. And they've got things locked down in certain areas, but generally speaking, not as locked down as my Windows laptop was with my previous employer. And I was surprised to see that they do not appear to have antivirus software running on this thing.
Well,
maybe it's hidden somewhere that I can't see it, but I don't see it running.
Huh.
I would have thought that it would have been visible.
Huh.
But,
I mean, again, Macs, knock on wood, don't get nearly as many viruses as anything else. So if they're still running that, then they're still pretty good. They're still Linux-ish, so I'm happy with that.
Well, yeah. So I had the choice between Windows 7 and OS X as a supported laptop. I also had the choice of Ubuntu Linux.
As a supported laptop?
As a supported laptop, but like you said, there were some applications that I needed to do my job that were not supported on Ubuntu. And so they had some of the stuff supported. And I checked with the help desk, and they may allow me to install Linux in a virtual machine on this thing, which if it turns out I can do that, I may just go ahead and do that. But
very, very cool. Unless you got – did you get a fully spec'd out MacBook Air?
Like,
i7 with like 8 gigs of RAM?
I don't know how much RAM is in here. I didn't check. Let me see.
Click the Apple.
The Apple about this Mac. Yeah.
More info. Yeah. System report.
No, just about this Mac.
Oh, it should just be right there on the about this Mac.
Oh,
section.
Is it yeah. Right on that page?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Little pop up.
Oh, there it is. Memory. There's a little menu there. Ew, 4 gigabytes.
Yeah.
I know, wouldn't. Two 4 gigabyte sticks. So it's got 8. Yeah.
Two 4 gigabyte sticks, you might be okay. I mean, I ran a MacBook Air there for a while, and it was the 4 gig version, and it took some of my virtualization, like it did some of it okay, but anytime I went beyond the, like stress testing that thing really was just me opening one additional virtual machine, and it would cripple it. So you've got a sufficient amount of RAM. Is it the i7 or is the i5?
i7.
Oh, you're good to go.
Yeah. It's plenty speedy enough for the stuff that I need it to do.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy with it, except that it's running the wrong operating system. But that's another thing. The help desk did say that they might be able to provision me with a computer that has Ubuntu on it, and I need a laptop. So
I actually, every single time this happens, I get surprised at this. I forgot that my Mac Mini has 16 gigs of RAM in it.
Ah.
It still runs slower than I'm comfortable with, but you know that's got to be the i5 in it.
You know, Ford just tried to see how much memory he has. He went to the Apple and pulled it down, and they came up with a message. He says, "It says you are unworthy to know how much RAM is in this Mac."
That makes sense. Unworthy to know. You're not worthy.
So yeah, I haven't run into too many frustrations yet with. The operating system itself not allowing me to do what I want to do with it, other than this camera thing. That's really bothering me now. But because I had it working, I tested it out on a Hangout just before we got on there.
But you were in the wrong Hangout. Maybe the wrong Hangout has got it. Yeah.
I bet you 10 bucks maybe. You have another Hangout window open. Go back to your other windows and make sure you have every other potential Hangout window closed.
Closed, and that'll release the camera. That's probably what it is.
Maybe so, but I don't see anything else. Let me go. Yeah, I just have Hangouts and one Google Chrome and the settings. That's it. That's all I've got open. Oh, and the terminal.
Yeah, the terminal. Hmm.
That's it. That's it. That's all I've got. So maybe at a break.
Yeah,
we're
coming up the bottom of the hour.
On Hangout and then call back in.
Yeah, that's probably what you'll have to do. I would think that'll probably do it. And
there's something taking up the camera. But let's get back to the topic at hand, shall we?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, so other similarities. Well, OS X has security built in the same way that Linux has security built in. Not that it's immune from infection or immune from attack, for that matter. Nothing's immune from attack. But security is better with Unix-based operating system, primarily because it's designed as a multi-user operating system, and it's designed to not allow you to install things without acknowledging that you are indeed installing something. So it's the security settings are very similar between Linux and OS X, and that's one of the things that makes it easy to switch between the two, is that I don't really have to worry all that much about antivirus, anti-malware, all that sort of stuff. Although I would feel a little more comfortable these days with antivirus running on this laptop, but hey, that's not for me to install, that's for the help desk, so we'll just let them install it when they're ready, I suppose.
All right.
Hello, have you tried turning it off and on again?
I could do that. Mm-hmm. It might get a little quiet on my end, and you guys would have to carry the ball for a little bit. But anyway, some of the differences. here are some of the differences. And I'm going to begin to compare this now to my Chromebook as well.
You have a Chromebook too?
I do.
Which one?
The little 11-inch Samsung Chromebook, the original Samsung.
Oh, did I tell you I've got the new HP 14-inch?
Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Well, I thought, you know, since I'm getting a MacBook Air, I really don't need another full-size laptop. I've got an HP running Linux Mint, and I've got the MacBook Air. And so the Chromebook was just something to sit in the living room with and surf the internet, check my email. You know, that
actually, I went on a quick little trial of my Chromebook here recently. I wanted to see if it could replace my primary primary traveling machine. What I did was basically it was what would happen if I were on the road and I didn't want to lug around my 17-inch laptop and I didn't want to lug around, you know, my other traveler laptop that is Ubuntu, and went down to Denver, had it for an entire day of doing stuff, and I was completely happy. This one actually has 4G in it, so I'm loving that even more. It's just like, wow, you know, it doesn't really matter where I am. I'm connected, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, well, and the Chromebook that I got doesn't have 4G in it, and the reason for that is because the phone at the time that I was using was allowing me to do the wireless hotspot. Unfortunately, the company that I'm with now does not allow you to do wireless hotspotting from your phone, so foiled by my own plans. But hey, you know, how often do I not have wireless?
Yeah. This is true.
So anyway, some of the differences. Let's get into that. Keyboards between a Windows laptop and a Linux laptop. Typically, a Linux laptop is a Windows laptop, and so the keyboard will be the same. But with OS X. The modifier keys are in different order. And by modifier keys, what I'm talking about are the control, alt, and function keys. And the Windows, or the super key, as it's called in Linux. And the control, option, command keys on an OS X machine. The control and the alt are flipped. And so I'm always hitting the wrong key.
you're doing it on the built-in keyboard. Try slapping like a Logitech keyboard on that thing.
I do. And when you have to do Command V for paste, you know, or Command C, I have to do Super Key C and Super Key V or Windows C. So I may have to do some keyboard remapping.
All right. Well, listen, we're at the bottom of the hour break. And while we're on break, why don't you try to reload your camera. This is the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, on the IRN Radio Network. Larry Bushy, it's our All Linux Show. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is your London Minute. Voice memo. Opposites attract, which may explain why my husband has a work-provided BlackBerry Q10 and I don't. His phone has a 3.1-inch touchscreen, a familiar BlackBerry Type and Go keyboard, and 13.5 hours of talk time, if one can find the contacts. On his way back from work, in the car, on Bluetooth, he tried to phone me. What about home?
Home, details not found.
It's not just me he won't be phoning. 500 people went missing. 100 reappeared the other day. I'm there if you view LinkedIn contacts, but I don't exist in all contacts. The work IT department and the useful crackberry.com website will hopefully restore me soon. Where's my iPhone 5? I want to give it a hug. P.S. The voice memo was created with the help of the app called Chattermalls.
Thanks, Patricia.
If you like the sound of the London Minute Voice Memo and want your company attached to it as a sponsor, contact me or Craig Crossman. I'm at Computer Tweety on Twitter. This is Patricia Reichel for Computer America.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We are talking to Larry Bushy. And Patricia, thank you again for the London Minute. We love you. We're talking to Larry Bushy. But before we go on, Larry, hats off. I love your shirt, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I have a couple like this. And this is the one that I chose to wear on camera today.
Well, Larry, I got to say, Larry, this is actually the first time I'm seeing you, and you look nothing like what I imagined you look like. So,
you imagined that I would look like a penguin, right?
Now, you see, another thing is that whatever you're doing it right because your lips are in perfect sync with the audio.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good. But Charles still is lagging. He's got a lag. When he uses his Chromebook, it's in perfect sync. But for some reason, he's always like about a second behind. But when he puts his Chromebook in, he's perfectly synced up. So there's got to be some oddities going on with the Hangouts that the different computers get different results. But
I'm really surprised because I'm using wireless on the air rather than a hard-lined network connection because there is no hard-lined network connection on the MacBook Air. Mm. And the reason I chose to use it rather than my HP is because the camera is better on this thing. And I thought that I should probably use the better of the two cameras since this is the first time I will have appeared.
And you're looking right. And you're looking right into the camera too, not above or below. I'm getting perfect eye contact with you. You're looking directly into it. So,
well, for now, once I start looking at the show notes that are up on the wall here, then it all goes to heck.
I know.
Anyway,
if you're not watching the live video streaming, you should see his T-shirt. We should volunteer. It says, "I'm here because you broke something." Very good. We really like that. Okay, so we're following along with the show notes at ComputerAmerica.com. Of course, the topic is everything I learned about switching from Windows to the Mac, I learned from Linux. That's the topic for tonight's show. And certainly we'll interrupt that if we get a call, 347-884-8881. So continue on, please, sir.
Sure. So we were talking about the modifier keys, and on the MacBook here, the function key that, and most laptops have a function key that allows you to switch between the F1, F2, and whatever is above them or below them, depending on what kind of a computer you have. The function key is far over to the left on the Mac keyboard. And on a Windows keyboard, the function key kind of drifts, depending on which manufacturer of laptop you have, what year it was made. The function key could be to the right of the control key. It could be to the left of the control key. But the Alt key on the Mac key, which is labeled Option, it's also labeled Alt for Windows switchers like me, is to the right of the control key on the Mac keyboard, whereas on a Windows keyboard or on a Linux computer keyboard, it's flip-flopped. So we were talking about the fact that you can remap the keys, and you can use an external keyboard, which I'm using, but the external keyboard still has the same problems that this keyboard does, which is when you want to do which on Windows and Linux would be a Control C for copy. It's a Command C on the OS X keyboard. And when I connect it up to my Logitech wireless keyboard that you can see here, which is set up as a Windows keyboard, I have to press the Windows key in order to get it to Control C or Command C, because the Windows key is mapped to the Control.
Very confusing.
Yeah, the Windows key is mapped to the Command key by default.
All very confusing.
Yes, all very confusing. So the nice thing about Linux is you can remap the keys to wherever you want. I suspect I'll be able to do that on OS X as well, but I haven't figured out how to do that. I haven't researched it. It hasn't been that much of an adjustment, quite frankly. Some other things that are different are those keyboard shortcuts. Oftentimes, you'll use the command key on OS X instead of the control key as you would on Linux or Windows, but sometimes you use the control key just as you would. So it's even more confusing. So, for example, as I said, the control copy, control paste, command copy, command paste, all use the command key on OS X.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're skipping through text on the screen, you use the arrow key and the control key on OS X, just as you do on Windows and Linux, sometimes. Sometimes you don't. So again, more confusion. But Linux allows you to do remapping of keys, so that shouldn't be too much of a problem. So that's another difference. Another difference is when you want to find a piece of software that does something specific on Linux, you go to the Software Center or the repositories, and you download it, and you use it, and you don't have to pay for it, typically. On OS X, you can to the App Store and see if there's something there, and there might be something for free, but typically there's something there that will do what you want, but you have to pay for it. So there are lots of examples of that. One of the things that I miss very dearly is the ability to use abbreviations and have that abbreviation expand out to a paragraph or to a sentence or just to an expanded word or something like that. In Linux, you have something called AutoKey that does that. And I've tried using the keyboard shortcuts in OS X, which do allow you to do that to some degree, maybe not a whole paragraph, but you can type in a few letters and have it automatically change those letters to something else. But it doesn't work in a browser. At least it doesn't work in the Chrome browser, I found. So it just sits there and stares at you. It doesn't do anything.
No.
So I'm afraid I'm going to have to invest in something like Text Expander.
Yeah, Smiles Text Expander, I use it. That's Greg Scown's company. He's been on the show many, many times. I think Text Expander is really, really well done, and a lot of thought has gone into it. Before Text Expander, I use something called from Rainmaker software called Spellcatcher. And in Spellcatcher, to me, one of the best utilities for the Mac that I said, if you have a Mac, you have to have Spellcatcher. It's a wonderful multi-purpose, multi-function expander, ghosting. I mean, had everything you could possibly want more. And then the author of that software up and died.
No.
Oh, yeah, that was the...
Sounds like you're like, how dare he
die? I know. He up and died, and that was... Because he was nice. It was nice. We had him on the show numerous times, and he just suddenly passed away. And I went, the program has been basically orphaned. They can't find anybody to support it. At least that's what it says at the Rainmaker software website. It's still up there, and it's going on like its second year now that this has happened. And I with the updating of the operating systems, it was acting more and more flaky. And I said, okay, I got to find something that's current and that's being supported. So I saw Text Expander from a Smile. That's Greg Scown's company, and I went ahead and installed it, and it's wonderful. It does basically everything that you want in a text expander and more. It's very flexible. It has all the options that you really need, from clipboard support. I mean, it has, you know, I found it, and I'm comparing it to, of course, the Rainmaker software product, Spellcatcher. So it's really well done. Of course, it doesn't do everything that Spellcatcher does, because Spellcatcher was a spell checker. But, you know, at the same time, so many of the applications now auto spell check and will do it in many, many ways. So Spellcatcher was becoming an anachronism. You really didn't need – I mean, the spell checker was nice because it worked through the operating system and affected everything. But now even text edit, you know, there's spell checking ability. So the only last thing I think that the Spellcatcher had that I would like to have is a – it had a ghostwriter. So in other words, if you something happened, your system died, you could go back and because everything you would type, it would, you know, it would put into a little file based upon the application that we wanted. So every once in a while, it saved my bacon a few times over the years, and it was nice to have. But even that now, I mean, even Word auto saves. So at this point, I think Spellcatcher is really not necessary anymore because of all the support that you get now from the applications. They understand the importance of Spellcatcher. But I like Text Expander. I don't know if you played with it, Larry, but it's really nice. And
I haven't yet. It's something that I've heard a lot about.
Yeah.
I listened to the Nocilla cast, Allison Sheridan's podcast, and
yeah.
She has a slight Mac bias to her
right.
to her podcast.
Yeah.
And she used to advertise Text Expander quite a bit on there, and so that's the first thing that came to mind
yeah.
when I found out that there was no auto key for
yeah.
for the Mac. But
it's
unfortunately, that other program that you were using, it was not open source. Otherwise,
yeah.
someone could have just picked up where the
yeah.
the previous developer had left off and continued on with
yeah.
it.
But, you make an excellent point.
If only he had known, he could have open sourced it before he passed away.
He passed away. Yeah, unfortunately, that
but,
wasn't the case.
You know, one day, there he was gone. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah, that's it. Now, Text Expander also is not open source, but the point is at least, you know,
no.
There is some support there. I think it's going to be around for quite some time. And, I mean, it has all the options that you can think of that I wanted to see in a Text Expander. This really has everything from auto correction, accented words. I mean, it's got every possible nuance that you want. So, you know, and I forgot how much it costs. I can go on it, but it's inexpensive, and it's really nice. So if you're looking for it, and yeah, on a Mac, I would highly recommend Text Expander. So that's
yeah. Great. So, and, you know, to give equal time to AutoKey, so AutoKey
yeah.
is an excellent way of scripting abbreviations into entire paragraphs if you
mm-hmm.
want. You could even do an entire book from a single script if you wanted to. And it will allow you to expand snippets of text, much like Text Expander would do. And it allows you to do some additional scripting beyond just expanding text and those sorts of things. It doesn't do any spell checking or anything like that. But
mm-hmm.
even the cloud-based applications these days have built-in spell
yeah,
checkers.
Yeah, they do.
So you really, as you said, you really don't need them these days.
Yeah.
But for Linux users who are looking for something, if you're moving from the Mac to Linux and you're looking for something to replace Text Expander, look for AutoKey, AutoKey,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be in the repositories for sure. And if not, we can provide a link in the show notes to you
okay.
to AutoKey for you. It's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that I have found that are different are things like proprietary drivers and lockdown settings. So unlike with Linux, where many of the drivers for hardware are actually built into the kernel and you really don't have to worry about installing drivers, except for the newest or the unsupported hardware out there, and it could be very old unsupported hardware or brand new unsupported hardware, sometimes you can find, if you've got a Linux-friendly device, the manufacturer of the device will provide a Linux driver for you. Sometimes if it's a popular sort of device from a manufacturer that allows open source communities to develop based on their APIs or based on information they give you about their hardware, then you'll be able to just wait generally a few weeks or a month or two for the Linux community to develop the driver for that hardware
mm-hmm.
if the manufacturer doesn't do it themselves. But what I found on OS X is that there is a lot of support for much of the hardware that's out there. You still have some of the problems with some older hardware not being supported with current drivers, and of course, because of proprietary drivers, unless the manufacturer is providing or the manufacturer of the hardware is providing the driver, it's typically not going to be there for you. So there's a little bit of a downside there. But the drivers that do exist and the ones that are supported are readily available, easy to install, and pretty capable, let's put it that way. But I still think Linux has a little bit of an edge there where you can run really old printers for a long time until you can no longer get ink. Whereas with Windows and OS X, if it's an old printer and the driver doesn't exist, it doesn't matter whether you can get the ink or not, you're out of luck. Yeah. Another couple of differences here are in the settings and the options. I mentioned earlier that there's less control in some of the settings. I've noticed that. And another difference on the positive side for OS X is that more thought has been given to the user interface design, and I've abbreviated that UX design in the show notes in case people are wondering what that UX means. So, for example, the multi-monitor settings, I wasn't surprised to see them there, but what I was surprised is that when I clicked to set up two monitors, each monitor's settings appeared on that monitor by default. As soon as I plugged it in and selected it on OS X. It does not happen that way on Windows or the Mac. I mean, Windows or Linux. The settings are in a single panel in Linux, and you can easily set them up. But it's a bit of a nicety that OS X has. If you have an external monitor and you choose to enable that external monitor as extended desktop, the settings for that monitor appear on the monitor. Now, of course, if your settings are wrong and you can't see that settings panel, another nice thing that OS X has done is they've given you a little box, a little button that allows you to, I think it says, let me take a look here. I think it says gather settings or something like that.
Well, actually, let me just say, because I think the one thing on the monitor that is nice, and they have it, I think one of the things they do is because with the Thunderbolt, additional Thunderbolt to the Mac, they have monitors now that actually use the Thunderbolt. Apple actually sells monitors that are Thunderbolt. And so I guess they really want to make sure that, you know, if you put a Thunderbolt monitor, you're going to have it, the controls for it right then and there. So I think they put a little bit more attention to it, and that's why you're seeing that. I mean, it's a good thing, but that's probably why you're seeing it.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I just thought that was quite nice that they have that. And you can, if one of your monitors is acting up, you can actually gather the settings into one page, and it brings both panels together. Mm. Additional features by default on OS X. So you can get mouse gestures to work on Linux, but they're there on OS X. And there are many more of them than you have by default without tweaking, without getting into the command line on Linux. It's just not supported as well.
Of course, on Windows hardware,
it's a little newer than it is on OS X.
Have you seen the system preferences for the Apple trackpad? Because you actually have little videos that are running in the system preferences. It's very cool, showing you the gesture and what it looks like. And each time you select the gesture, you'll see the appropriate video looping over and over again, so you can see what. Yeah, so I thought it was something very, very nice that they added that.
Yeah. A lot of the, you may not be able to tweak as many of the settings, but the settings that are there, they certainly give you a lot of explanation and a lot of, like you said, video displays as to how to make it work. And when you're talking about a gesture, hey, what's better than a video?
Yeah.
Right. Try to describe it in words. So in summary, in my move from Linux to the Mac, I can now think about people who are moving from the Mac to Linux and what the requirements are there, and it requires a lot less adjustment than moving from Windows to Linux, from Mac to Linux. Mm-hmm. And so the other side of the coin is, if you're considering moving from Windows and switching to Linux, it's not going to require much, if any, more adjustment than switching from Windows to OS X. Mm. So if you're thinking of leaving Windows because of Windows 8 or because you've got an older computer and it's working just fine except that you've got viruses and things settings in your operating system, consider moving to Linux, because if you were to move to OS X, it would be about the same amount of adjustment you'd have to do. And I can say that quite honestly and from firsthand experience now. Whereas I was speaking from my conversations with other people up until now, I can now speak a little more authoritatively about it. You'll have more control with Linux. You'll have more software selections with Linux and a lower overall cost of ownership for your individual needs. Of course, through hardware purchases, but also through the purchases of software in moving from Windows to Linux rather than from Windows to OS X. And if you want to, you'll be able to learn more and do more than you're allowed to do on any locked-down operating system that's a proprietary operating system. So I highly recommend moving to Linux. And as I've always said, maybe not quite this loudly, if you're not going to move to Linux, move to OS X.
Well, I think that's a good compromise.
I think it is. They share a lot of security. They share a lot of features, and it's just as easy to move from Windows to either of them. I think Linux is a little bit better because you have a lot more you can do with it. But on the other hand, when you move from Windows to Linux, the downside is you have a lot more you can do with it, and so there's a lot more you need to learn. So,
well, I mean, the other thing is OS X is more supported across the board. So, I mean, like, if you need Word or Office or PowerPoint or any of those things, you can actually get them versus the open source equivalents on the Linux machine. Now, mind you, right, those aren't bad at all. You know, they work great for everything that I do, and for basic stuff, they work fine. The catch, or the caveat on all of that is, well, if you need Word or you need like something high end like Photoshop. But Craig, didn't you say that Photoshop has something that's like completely cloud now?
Yes, Adobe has moved primarily to the cloud now. Just like Microsoft Office 365, it's in the cloud. All the big companies are now going to the cloud. You are assured for a yearly subscription fee, which is a lot less than what Photoshop would cost. You know, it's like $99, something along those lines. You're assured of having the latest version and all the updates, but it does. It works in the cloud. You don't really necessarily have the application on your computer. You're using a cloud-based setup. Some of it's on your computer, but most of it's in the cloud now. And Adobe,
right? And of course,
yeah.
When you're working in the cloud, it doesn't matter what your operating system is. It can be Google Chrome.
That's right.
OS X. It could be Windows. It can be Linux. And it all works the same way because it's in a browser.
Yep.
And almost all the browsers are available for almost all of the operating systems.
Well, it's what the Internet was supposed to be. The Internet was supposed to be the great equalizer. It was platform independent. That was the intention. It hasn't been for a long time, but now we're starting to see that it, you know, the way it was intended. It doesn't matter what operating system you're using. If you're using something on the internet, you're going to be able to use it, and that's where they're heading. You know,
right? The company that I work for now does literally everything in the cloud. Gmail, the corporate version of Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
All of the applications we use are in the cloud. We have Office installed on the computers mainly for compatibility with customers' information moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd all be using Google Docs, which we do. So everything we do, with the possible exception of Microsoft Office products,
why? Because
in the cloud.
Why not they just use Office 365, which is the cloud-based version of that? Why not?
Well, that may be an option in the future. It may just be legacy reasons that they are using the installed version of these software programs right now. But I see them moving more and more towards Google Docs, and if Google Docs becomes a little bit more compatible with the Microsoft proprietary formats of their pseudo open standards, I think Google Docs would be a very a very viable option to any sort of Microsoft product. But, you know, as soon as Google fixes the formatting, Microsoft could change it, and then they've got to start over again. So I think it's a never-ending battle.
For truth, justice, and the American way.
American way. There you go.
Exactly. I'm sorry, it's a comic book. Superman reference. All right. Well, good. I think, you know, and I think, as you say, I think that your company will either one of two things will happen: either that LibreOffice will become compatible enough with Microsoft Office, or they'll just go with the 365, and that $99 gets them everything. I mean, you know, Excel, PowerPoint, the database version of in Microsoft Office
Access.
Yeah, you get everything, you know, and you're always assured of having the latest version, you know, so why not?
Yeah, and I think that from a total cost of ownership perspective, it's probably better to go with Office 365. Here we are talking about Microsoft products, better to go with the cloud than it is to go with the installed version, because one of the things that Microsoft does is it makes changes to the applications that require you to upgrade the operating system, which require you to upgrade the hardware, and your cost goes through.
All right. Hey, we're at the top of the hour. We're on our All Linux show with Larry Bushy. Charles and I and Larry will be right back just in a few seconds. This is the Computer America Show on the Boost Radio Network, on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America.
Woo-hoo!
Hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello, and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host,
Craig Grossman.
And I'm only here because Craig broke something. I am your co-host, Charles Tendell.
I didn't break anything. What was
are you
it?
Sure?
Yeah, everything's working.
Are you sure? Exactly. Larry and I are here for the same reason. Because you broke something.
I didn't break anything.
Larry, I've got to start wearing mine more often. I mean, I'm typically in an attitude shirt. Today's is not an attitude shirt, but my favorite one thus far is I Void Warranties, and the one that says that it's got a binary, a one and a zero, and it says there are 10 from the layman, the one and the zero types of people in the world: those who can read binary and those who cannot.
And those who can't. Yes. Well, I have a few I can share. I'm not going to reveal any at this point, but
Well, welcome into hour two of the Computer America Show. It's our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy, and we're going to kind of shift gears, and we're going to move into what we talked our email portion of the show. These are emails that get sent to Larry over the month, and he picks the ones that he feels are most appropriate, and we will read them. And again, you can follow along. Just go to our show notes page at ComputerAmerica.com. There's a link there to the email as well as to the first portion of the show, so you can follow along either way. And, again, if you want to call us, 347-884-8881. I'll get you on and get you through. If you have a question, we'll stop what we're doing and we'll try to answer your Linux question. Anyway, we're going to shift to the emails. Again, you can follow along if you like. And our first email is from someone named Mike, who says he's spooked.
He is spooked. Yes, he is. And I see that Charles has the "We'll be right back" sign up, which is not good. I was hoping he would be around for this one, but let's head into it anyway. Mike says, "Hi, folks. This GNU TLS bug has me a little spooked. I have the routine of installing a live Linux DVD to do my banking. Now I'm using Mint 16. will I have to wait until Mint 17 to have the GNU TLS bug patched on DVD? What Linux kernel has the patch built in? Anyhow, keep up the good work. I always look forward to your podcasts, always positive and upbeat. So, Mike, the GNU TLS bug, we have some links in the show notes to some articles about this. And if you take a read through these, some of these are kind of long, but the first one we've linked to, one of the first sections there is, what is the GNU TLS bug? And you'll find out that this is a bug in an OpenSSL software. And the OpenSSL is something that allows you to remote control into not only Linux computers, but Windows computers and Mac computers as well. And the OpenTLS is, or the GNU TLS is licensed under an open source license, and OpenSSL is also an open source license. As a result, bottom line is there's a bug that opens up some vulnerability. This is not a vulnerability that can be fixed with a patch for the kernel, because the GNU TLS is not in the Linux part of GNU Linux. It's in the GNU part of GNU Linux. And GNU is not Unix, which is what it stands for. But Linux is really in two parts. There's the kernel, which is the basic foundation software that lets the operating system be the operating system. And then there are a whole bunch of tools on top of that that allow it to be a graphical operating system, among other things. There are a lot of tools that are used for writing code and compiling code that are part of the GNU tools. Well, this GNU TLS is part of that set. And so it is a patch that's needed to the specific software that is affected by this bug, this GNU TLS bug. And so there is a way to patch it. First of all, if you're on a modern Linux operating system, you'll get the patch through the updates. But if you're on an older version of, let's say, Ubuntu that's no longer supported, they may not send you the security patch to upgrade it. But there is a way to get to the patch, and we've provided some links to how to do that in the second link in the show notes. And this one is a ZDNet article that describes again what the issue is, what's caused it, and how to do the patch. And it is an upgrade to GNU TLS version 3.2.12 or later that you need. And if you go to your repositories and the patch isn't there, then you should be able to go to the GNU website and download the latest version and install it and replace the version that you have there today. So it is a vulnerability. Apparently it's been there for years, and it's just been uncovered. Hopefully bad guys haven't been taking advantage of it all these years, but it is also patched. So,
which vulnerability?
This is the GNU TLS bug. It's the first and second link in the show notes. We've got a ZDNet article and an article from Linux.com News, and both of those will talk about that. And we've also got links to the GNU TLS patches there on the GNU page. Okay, so that's email number one.
Right, so then we're going to go to Brian. Yeah, we're going to Brian. And he has a question about Office on Linux in our G+ community, Google Plus community.
Yeah, so Google Plus, yeah. So this is the Going Linux Google Plus community. I don't know if you have a Computer America Google Plus community, do you, Craig?
Developing.
What?
We do. It's developing.
You do. Okay, it's developing. Okay. Well,
all the people that are listening to the Going Linux podcast, we're cool here too on the Computer America show. You just can join our little group and comment and have fun and interact and poke fun at Craig because he sits very, very, very still and talks without moving his mouth.
No, I'm blurry now.
He's got his webcam firewall enabled.
Yeah, you see exactly. you see my finger moving over there. That's me.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So, yeah. So in our Google Plus community, Brian asked, I'm just starting to listen to your podcast, or I just started to listen to your podcast about a month ago and thoroughly enjoy it. Thanks for your great work. My apologies if this has been covered in a previous episode. I have a couple of questions, but we'll try to simplify them as best I can with a bit of background information. I was so really, really, really wanted to move over to a 100% Linux environment in my home and work. And from Bill's advice, Bill is my co-host on the Going Linux podcast, I have started with PC Linux OS. But I always get stopped at the big hurdle that is Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
I need an echo.
Microsoft Office.
Office.
All the advice I have gotten is LibreOffice and OpenOffice can open Word files. .doc and .doc. In my real-world experience, this is particularly true, but it is not seamless at all. In a usual business environment, everybody else is using Microsoft Word, so sending out documents to clients and coworkers who use Word documents need to keep the original formatting, which is typically where the problem comes in the other Office suites. If there are any graphs or pictures or special formatting, it is just not feasible to use. What is your guys' opinion on this? Larry, how is Google Docs in this case? Better at preserving format than moving between software? Last question is, sometimes I have heard of large companies, Fortune 500 companies, running Linux. I am assuming they are talking about server-side OS and not desktop-side. Are there any large companies running desktop Linux? I would think they would have these kinds of problems too. Do you know what they do in this kind of case when trying to use Linux in a business environment? Would love to start a Linux movement in my company. Sorry for the long post and question. Thanks so much again for your great podcast and for helping the little guys. I hope to be 100% Linux soon. All right, so Microsoft Office. We talked a little bit about that in the first hour. And LibreOffice and OpenOffice typically don't have too much trouble with Word compatibility and Excel compatibility. That's word processor and spreadsheet compatibility. It's PowerPoint or presentation software and graphics. And sometimes when you embed the graphics into the word processor document and so on, sometimes those can give you trouble. But if you stick with, my recommendation is if you're going to use LibreOffice and OpenOffice and you want to maintain compatibility with people who actually use Microsoft's Office products, when you save the file in Office format, Microsoft Office format, use the .doc or the .xls rather than the .doc X or XLSX, which is the more modern version of the file format, the compatibility between LibreOffice and OpenOffice and the one generation back of Microsoft Office file format is much better than the current version. So if you just save it with a .doc extension or a .doc rather than a .docx format, then you'll be fine in most cases. There are going to be problems if you use a lot of fancy graphics or especially transitions and things like that in your presentation files. So there's not too much you can do about that. Brian asked about the compatibility with things on the Google environment, Google presentations, Google spreadsheets, Google word processor documents. In my experience, the compatibility there is about the same. as it is with LibreOffice and OpenOffice. There are some compatibility and formatting issues. There are some compatibility issues on getting the format exactly right. Generally speaking, if it's simple, it'll work just fine. If there's a lot of complexity to the document that you're trying to save, it's going to have some challenges as well. I found on my Chromebook that there is a file converter, a cloud-based file converter program that does a reasonable job of converting from the Google formats to the OpenOffice and LibreOffice formats and from the Google formats to the Microsoft formats. But again, there are those occasions when they don't do all that well. So to maintain absolute compatibility, the best you could do, I think, would be, since Microsoft has the lion's share of the market, if most of the people you interact with are using Microsoft's product, you'll either have to live with the fact that there's going to be a situation here or there that will give you some file compatibility issues, or go with a cloud-based solution like Office 365. The other question that Brian asked was about large Fortune 500 companies and them using desktop Linux. There are many countries in the world that do not use Microsoft products as their first preference. Germany is moving in that direction, many European countries, some third world countries, South American countries often will use Linux as their first choice operating system and will use the open source Office suites that go along with those. And when you're dealing within that environment, let's say you're in Brazil and you're using Linux and you're using OpenOffice and you exchange documents with people who are using OpenOffice, there's no compatibility issue. Absolutely no compatibility issue. And if you're exchanging between OpenOffice and LibreOffice, no compatibility issue. It's really when you're trying to convert into a proprietary format like the Microsoft folks have or the Google folks have that you're going to have compatibility issues. And those are because those companies don't adhere to open standards, even though Microsoft tries to market its format as an open standard. It's only open within the Microsoft environment.
You know,
it isn't open at all.
You know, I find it a little surprising because DocX and all of these newer formats have been around for quite some time now. It's not like they just sprung out on the market. I mean, I've had, you know, even on the Mac platform when the last version, I think the last version was 2011. Microsoft Office was updated on the Mac version. So DocX and all these changes have been around since, years, maybe even longer.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the OpenOffice, hasn't – I understand that you're saying the older formats are more compatible, but how many years does it take before they finally, you think they'll get to the point where it's completely compatible?
Well, here's the situation. If Microsoft would let people know what their format is and how to make their software compatible with their format, we could do it in the open source community almost overnight, certainly within a month. The problem is
reverse engineering.
They only release certain amounts of information about it, and they reserve the right to keep everything else secret because it's proprietary format.
So they have to
open format is a proprietary format.
So they have to reverse. They have to reverse engineer it. That's what's taking the time.
That's what takes the time.
Yeah.
And Microsoft could easily provide an update through its update facility in Windows, or just the update facility that comes in the Office suite.
Mm-hmm.
And that minor change could change the format enough that now what OpenOffice and LibreOffice have built to be compatible is no longer compatible because Microsoft tweaked the format. You might think that they're doing it intentionally.
They are.
Maybe not. that's the conspiracy theory, and I happen to subscribe to that one. But, it's proprietary, and that's the issue. The reason that the older formats are more compatible is, A, because we've had more time to reverse engineer it, and, B, Microsoft isn't making a lot of changes to those old formats. So whenever we figure it out, it stays that way. And so the compatibility is there. And that's why it works. Now, if you take a LibreOffice file that you saved in that .doc format and you give it to somebody who's running Windows and they're running Office 2010 or 2013, it will open it and it will convert it to the .docx format just fine because you're converting it within the Microsoft environment. And they know what the standards are. They're not letting other people know. That's the issue.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I guess it makes sense. Especially since they have to reverse. Now, although I have to say, once they have the .docx parameters done, I don't think they're going to do anything that in the actual application. They can do things in the application, but I don't think they're going to mess around with the .docx standard because once you have that set, you don't really want to mess with that. For a number
unless
of
you
reasons.
Want somebody to prevent, you want to prevent somebody from having their software compatible with it.
Yeah, when you do that, when you mess around with the doc or the docx, and then you have to recode your application. Microsoft has to write Office to adjust, and then you have to send out updates to Office. You know, I guess it's possible. My experience has been once you have a document format, you have a .doc or a .docx, whatever it is, that they don't really mess with that much. That basically stays the same. I haven't, at least it's in my experience, it stays pretty much the same. And it's the application, it's different things in the application that will change, but the actual file itself, I think once they have that cast in stone, that kind of stays that way.
You would think so.
Yeah.
And maybe it is, mm-hmm. and I'm not a developer, so yeah. I can't speak from personal experience on that one.
Yeah,
but,
I hear you. Well, hopefully that helps
Brian.
Yeah, exactly. Brian is out for this, but it's a good email. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move to the next email, which is Kenneth. He's also attempting unsuccessfully to go all Linux. What's up with this?
Well, again, there's this company out there called Microsoft. So Kenneth writes from the home office of a Linux neophyte, but long time computer user.
Okay.
I have struggled with the need to run Windows software, Ashlar Vellum Graphite, a CAD software, and ACDC, a photo management software, for quite a while. So far, I still have a Windows 7 machine for these, since there is no quality Linux substitute. In addition, there are also some other software programs like Ancestry.com's Family Tree that won't run on Linux. But I have been using OpenOffice for several years in my home office, saying to heck with any incompatibility issues.
I thought Ancestry
is one way to solve the problem.
Yeah,
to heck with it.
I thought Ancestry is moving over to the cloud, though. More and more they're doing it on their website rather than the dedicated software.
As companies move their software to the cloud, it does become more cross-platform compatible for sure because it has to be browser compatible, and browsers are the same.
But I'm waiting to hear the portion of this where the guy says, "I've even tried it online and it didn't work."
Yeah, well, let's see if he says that. Okay, so he says, "But I have been using OpenOffice for several years in my home office, saying to heck with any incompatibility issues. The word processor and spreadsheets suit me just fine. But your office needs may vary like my CAD photo needs. In that case, you are stuck with either Wine," there it is, Charles, "Wine or a virtual machine. In the case of Wine, you only need to own Microsoft Office. In the case of Windows in a virtual machine environment, you need to own both Microsoft Office and Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, if you are stuck with the need for Windows software, you may only be totally satisfied with a Windows computer in the business environment. Right now, in my home office, I have Windows 7 machine and a Linux Mint machine sitting back-to-back with dual monitors and are connected via my home network. I like my Mint machine. I can do all my Internet Office work on it for traveling. I have a Windows laptop, which has had a Linux Windows 7 dual boot setup. Right now, I just can't totally get away from Windows. So far, I haven't gotten Wine or VirtualBox working, but I'm still trying.
Good.
So, yeah, at least he's still trying. And, there is always some sort of Mac software that's only available for OS X or Windows software that's only available for Windows that is not popular enough to a lot of Linux users, or it's so locked down with proprietary coding, impossible or very, very difficult to write something compatible for an open environment like Linux. So I'm afraid, Kenneth, if you're really tied into using these pieces of software, you're probably going to want to stick with Windows. But I do have a suggestion for you. You said that you have a Windows machine and a Linux machine sitting back-to-back with dual monitors. Why don't you do like I do and put the monitors side-by-side?
Ooh.
And then take your one keyboard from one of the computers and the mouse from that same computer, install a little piece of software. Let me go to make sure I put these in the show notes. Yes, I did. Okay. So you want to go and you want to take a look at the, where is it here? The one that says Office on Linux. There is a link right below that in the show notes that says one mouse, one keyboard, many computers. I am using my Logitech wireless keyboard.
Nice.
And my Logitech wireless mouse.
Oh, wait a minute. What is that? What kind of, what print? What is M705? What is that?
M510.
M510. Okay.
Yep. And I'm using both of them to control both my Linux laptop and my MacBook Air by moving them between the two screens. Actually, I have three screens, but the software that allows me to do that is software called Synergy.
Oh, I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, and it is compatible with Windows. It's compatible with OS X. It's compatible with Linux. And it's easy to install on all three of them. In fact, in Linux, it may just be sitting there in your repositories. If you're on Ubuntu or Linux Mint, you probably want to go to the Synergy site to get the latest version, because the version that's in the repositories is typically a little out of date and doesn't have all the settings that are available. But what this software allows you to do is put your screens side by side, use one keyboard, one mouse to control both computers, and just like you would move the mouse between two screens, an extended monitor setup on a single computer, you can move the mouse between the two computers. It captures the clipboard, and you can copy and paste from one to the other. And I use it between a Linux computer and, before I got my MacBook Air, a Windows computer, and between a Linux computer now and an OS X computer, and it works seamlessly. Mm-hmm. I've even had up to four computers connected to a single keyboard and mouse and switching between all four, controlling all four computers simultaneously. And I think the limit is something like 128 or 255 computers, but I'm not sure how you would handle that from a single keyboard and mouse. But the article that we've linked to is on the Going Linux website on how to set up Synergy on Linux and Windows. And I may just add a little section on how to set it up on a Mac as well.
Very nice.
I forgot about that tool. I actually went out and got a hardware KVM, and I'm pretty happy with that. But I remember using Synergy a while ago and remember thinking, man, this is awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I had to do a little workaround, and you'll enjoy this one, Charles. And we'll talk about that after the break.
After the break. Hey, by the way, Larry, I noticed that your headset is wireless, which is nice. And I actually have a question for you about that when we come back. You'll listen to the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network. We'll be right back with more Linux. Stay with us.
Hello there, this is your London Minute voice memo. I don't normally offer dating advice, but computing lessons do seem to get into areas beyond computing. Take the day I helped a client tweak her Match.com online dating profile. We uploaded a pleasant photo, one of her in spring pastel shades, revealing her sweet, warm smile. We carefully ticked boxes about her interests and whether smoking on a date was a yes, an okay, or an absolutely not. Then the Match.com algorithms got crunching and six profiles appeared for us to judge. One man caught her fancy. He looked rugged and outdoorsy in a close-up picture. We were about to send him a Match.com wink. Now that's a little nudge to show interest, like a Facebook poke. But first we thought we should enlarge the picture so we could see all of him. There was a shriek from my client and a gasp from me. To be continued. If you like the sound of the London Minute voice memo and want your company to sponsor my audio column, contact me at my website, loveyourcomputer.co.uk, or contact Craig Crossman or Charles Tendell. I'm at Computer Tweety on Twitter. This is Patricia Reichel for Computer America.
She loves me, see? I'm
yeah, you're back in her favors again.
I don't know why I didn't fall out of her favor. I'm gonna... Craig. Craig was talking stuff behind my back. I know this was going on. Welcome back to Computer America Show. We are 33 minutes into the second hour where Craig and I are talking to the man wearing the funniest T-shirt, or my favorite one for the evening, Larry Bushy from the Going Linux podcast. And we were doing user emails, and we were just talking about Synergy and a couple other high-speed apps, and Larry was going to give us a trick. If you guys have questions, comments, concerns, you want to harass Craig like I do on a daily basis, just want to feel part of the crew, give us a call, 347-884-8881. The number again, 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. Send us an email live at Computer America or join us over at computeramerica.com in our live interactive add-on chat room. Just go there, put in a family-friendly username, and come to the chat room and just enjoy all of the crazy Computer America stuff.
Yeah, by the way, so just before the break, I asked Larry about his headset, and I said they're wireless, right?
Yes, it is wireless.
Yeah, is it a Logitech headset?
It is.
It is, right?
Yes.
So my other question is, I see you have that really cool microphone there, but you also have a microphone in your headset. So which mic are you using?
I'm using the mic on the headset to talk to you over Google, but I'm using this microphone, the studio microphone, to do the recording on my end.
Oh, so two mics.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because
are you getting both sides of the audio, or just the...
I am not. I used to when we were on Skype. It was very easy to do on Skype. I haven't figured it out yet because I've got this new MacBook here. I haven't figured the mix minus stuff and getting all that working yet, but I'll figure it out, and maybe by next month we'll have that up and running and working.
Oh man, it's only going to be half the Going Linux podcast, because you know I'm the cool half, right?
Yes. Well, if I can get the camera from the MacBook and the audio from the Linux laptop, I think we'd be doing just great. So yeah, and this is kind of a unique headset. It's absolutely noise free, and it has two ways to interface to your computer. One is through radio frequency, and it's got one of those little Logitech nubs that fit into the USB port.
Yes.
And so it's got a wireless radio connection to that little nub and a USB to the sound in the computer, which is what I use on my Linux machine because it doesn't have Bluetooth. But with a switch of a button on the headset itself, it can switch to Bluetooth, and you can interface it to your computer using Bluetooth. And the MacBook Air has Bluetooth, and so that's the way I'm using it here. I did quite a few tests to make sure that the Bluetooth interface was as quiet as the radio interface, and it is. And so I've been quite happy with this. And for the past few years, I've been using this particular headset wirelessly. And the only time that I have to connect a cable to it is if it runs out of juice before the 2 hours of Computer America is up, in which case I have a nice little USB cable sitting right next to me, ready to plug in an emergency.
That little nub, by the way, is the Logitech Unifying Receiver, and that is a blessing. I gotta tell you, I love that Unifying Receiver because, as you know, you can interface up to 6 devices to that one Unifying Receiver, and the software that Logitech has come up with to do it makes it so easy to do. It really is
It really does. The headset actually uses a little different technology, and so there's a special receiver for the headset because it's not using the same technology as peripheral devices like keyboards and mice.
Mm-hmm.
But for my keyboard and mouse, I bought them at separate times, and I used the same Unifying Receiver for both of them, and I have actually found a utility for Linux. Logitech does not provide a utility for doing that setup of your Unifying Receiver for Linux, but it is the version that the Linux community has come up with is called Solar, S-O-L-A-A-R, and it gives you all of the utility that you have in the Logitech utility that they provide. And it gives you a battery monitor for your keyboard and for your mouse, and it allows you to set up the Unifying Receiver to match, mix and match keyboards, mice, and other peripherals with the Unifying Receiver. So it's actually a pretty useful tool.
Yeah, very, very nice.
And it has all of the features that the Logitech one does, so I'm sure that's why Logitech hasn't bothered to bring out a special version for Linux, because the Linux community already developed one.
There you go. All right, so we finished reading the Kenneth, but who's attempting to unsuccessfully to go to All Linux. However, I think it's the same Kenneth for the next email that also replied to Brian's post.
Yeah, he did. However, I promised a tip.
Oh, okay.
And
tip.
So Charles had mentioned that I had promised this, and I'd like to just fulfill that promise that I made. So here's the tip. On my work laptop, I often have to connect by VPN to the office network, my company's network. And as a result, that software, that Synergy software that allows you to connect keyboard and mouse, requires that the two computers be on the same network. And so, of course, when my Linux laptop is on my home network and I'm connected through the MacBook Air that only has a single network connection, I only have one connection to a network, and that happens to be through the VPN to the corporate network. Now, with my Windows laptop in my previous job, it had two network connections, so I was able to connect wirelessly to my home network and through the cable to the VPN, and so it wasn't a problem. There was at least a single connection to the same network, and Synergy worked just fine. But on here, it doesn't work. So my workaround, get into my router, open the firewall port that Synergy communicates on, and port forward that to my Linux laptop. And so I use the keyboard and mouse connect to my Linux laptop, port forward it so that the corporate connection can make it through and find the keyboard and mouse on my home network from my MacBook Air connected through the corporate.
It sounds a little labyrinthian, but I guess.
No, you know exactly what I'm going to ask, right?
What's that?
What is the authentication mechanism between any device? How does Synergy validate that you are able to send keyboard and mouse commands from this open port connection coming from your firewall?
Okay, so it uses port 4800 or something like that. And so there's a server version that's on my Linux laptop that has the keyboard and mouse connected to it. And there is a client version on the MacBook Air. And so what I've done is I've actually changed the port. So let's just say it's port 4900 for maybe it's 49,000, right, whatever it is. Let's say it's 49,000 that I've got the client set up to use on the MacBook. And so I connect that through to the router, open the port 49,000, forward it to the port 48,000 on my Linux laptop, and the two communicate through the open port in the firewall.
Right, but what's to prevent me from being outside your network right now with Synergy myself, port scanning you, finding that port, and now sending my mouse and keyboard command to your computer? Is
nothing.
There a password?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh,
except that in the latest version, which is one of the reasons why I suggested getting the latest version of Synergy, it does use encryption in the communication. So if you had the encryption keys, you could do just what you suggested. Without the encryption keys, even if you could, you can't see the screen. So you could do some nasty stuff to what I'm using, doing on the screen here, but it would be awfully difficult to do that, I think.
I mean, I wouldn't honestly want to send commands to your stuff other than, you know, the basic back end commands. But I would be more interested in intercepting those commands from one to the other, because while you're typing and you're using your keyboard and mouse and so on and so forth, you're entering things like passwords and all that other stuff, and it's being transmitted
right
out to the internet and then back around to your fire through your firewall into your home computer and vice versa. And to me, that makes me want to.
There's some risk there. There's definitely some risk there. And if you can get through the encryption, you could do a keylogger right there right on the internet and figure out what.
An invitation or a challenge?
No. Please no.
It's totally been like, oh, for the last 15 minutes of the Computer America show, it's the Hack Larry show.
Yes, and Larry can't control anything on his screen, so the show is just shut down.
Continues on, and suddenly Larry is, like, it would be like a teleprompter. You'd be reading, like, an email or something, and all of a sudden it'd be like, the cow is brown. What is this?
Yes, I could see myself reading something like, and Charles Tindall has broken into my computer.
Owned by Charles.
Yeah. The latest email is from Charles Tindall, who says,
ha-ha. It was more along the lines of, and the latest email that has just popped up and is currently being composed on my computer is going to and from Charles Tindall.
Of course, you could do that. Because it's Google Docs, you could edit the show notes as I'm reading them.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about that.
And it would look just like you hacked my computer. So.
Now, see, that's something else that's highly entertaining. So the office here, my office, is actually converted to completely Google Docs. With the one-off one or two, you know, local documents. And, you know, like accounting has, like, their normal spreadsheets, but all their spreadsheets are done in Google Docs. You know, and everybody's like, why did you do that? It's like, because now my staff cannot say, I don't have my computer with me. I'm like, you have internet? Yes, then get to work.
Here's my Chromebook. Go, use it.
I genuinely love my Chromebook, and we've actually deployed it to our sales team. And our sales team, so far, the reviews that we've gotten from it are fantastic. They're like, we love it. We absolutely love this. They don't have to worry about – and the beautiful thing is before we ship them, we log in to their particular account, you know, set it all up for them, and that's it. I mean, literally, it's just a matter of logging in, you know, and they're done.
They log in, and all their bookmarks are there. Everything's there. Everything's
and I don't – you know, I don't have to – I've taken phone calls with my Chromebook, and people don't even know. Like, people don't even know that I'm using a computer with a headset, and in one or two cases, it was just a regular plug-in head 3.5 millimeter jack. And we just tear through stuff. I mean, we're also an all Linux shop. You know, one of my newest partners, he likes to come in here with his Windows Surface, and, you know, he gets pounced on. But, you know, we're an all Linux shop, so we're everybody here runs Ubuntu. I distro hop, which I know we've got another email probably coming up, but did you hear, while I'm on the subject of Ubuntu, when is the 14.04 release scheduled? I thought it was supposed to come out today.
I don't know which day. I know it's in the month of April, and what I've noticed is they tend to leave it till the end of April.
Okay.
Most of the time. So this early in the month, I would be very suspect of that date. I wouldn't think that they would release it on the 15th of the month. It's usually later in the month, and then Linux Mint follows on about a month later, and their update.
Have you tried the beta release, the final beta that they came out with?
Normally I would, but I was in the middle of changing jobs. I had a lot more stuff to do around with Linux.
Don't worry, you're not missing anything. And
okay.
Out with a huge new update and everything else. But like, I switched over to 14.04 just because I wanted to see how it worked and everything else. In the words of Craig Crossman, it's not ready for prime time. I mean, just little things like Steam didn't work. You know, Skype I had to recalibrate to get things to work, or try and get things to work. There were libraries that were broken. You know, it was just a bad experience, and immediately it was like 13.10, here I come. You know,
yes, exactly. Well, when I do distro hop, I typically may try a beta to see if it's if it's stable enough for me to use, but I usually wait until at least the RC, you know, the release candidate before I actually switch. I have been known to switch to an RC and begin using it in production.
That's dangerous.
Especially with Linux Mint, because it's pretty clean usually, and usually their release candidate is just automatically switched over to with updates to the final release without having to reinstall anyway. So I've had good luck with that, but now I've just been a little bit too busy with other things to try out
release candidates.
Release
candidates can be a little flaky, but a heck of release candidates. I switched over to the current operating system, like Mavericks, and I went back to Snow Leopard, to Mountain Lion, because it was just not ready for prime time. So, you know, you're talking about release candidates. I'm talking about the actual operating systems that still have a problem. I don't like to be an early adopter when it comes to operating systems, because inevitably there's going to be something wrong. I like to wait till maybe the 0.02 or 0.03 version comes out and it's more stabilized. Mavericks has been really slow in getting everything to work properly. So I'm still using Mountain Lion, which is the previous version. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the old adage is, especially with Microsoft products, never, 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 ever use it until the second version.
Okay.
You know, and then it's stable. So let's move on to Kenneth's second email. He replied to Brian's post about Office for Linux. Remember that LibreOffice and OpenOffice are free and work on Windows just as well as Linux. Tell them to just download it where they may want to edit it. Just download it where they may want to edit it. I'm not sure what he means by that. Personally, I use Open or LibreOffice on my Windows as well as my Linux computers all the time and really don't have any problems. And like Ian says, you can export them to PDF, and nowadays some of these can be commented. So not sure about editing. Well, Kenneth, yes, there are some editing tools for PDFs on Linux. In the last 2 days, I generated an OpenOffice Word file with images embedded in it, converted it to .doc, sent it to a Microsoft Word user. No problems. I haven't played around with charts, etc. I know that there are disconnects, but I believe that you can make it work. You may just have to push others to do likewise. Finally, I guess that it depends on the type of business that you're working in. Good luck. And a couple of things to underline there. Yes, if you can convince people to use the same software that you're using, you won't have compatibility problems. And of course, Open and LibreOffice both have Windows versions as well as Mac versions and Linux versions. So in your conversion to an open source world, maybe the first step is to get those Windows users onto an open source Office platform and then move them to Linux. And then secondly, as Kenneth suggests, use the .doc rather than the .docx format, and you'll be a little more compatible.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I've actually never run into compatibility issues when I do the .doc versus the .docx. Whenever I use .docx, it's horrible. It is a horrible, yeah, horrible, nasty experience. But if it comes to me as a .doc, I can typically open it, read it, and make a few edits to it. Sometimes I have spacing off a little bit, but, you know, those are when they use, like, the high-speed macros and everything else on there.
Right. Right. Yeah, and to improve the compatibility of Libre and OpenOffice, whether that's on Windows or whether that's on Linux or on the Mac, if you install as many fonts as you can get, Windows fonts and Mac fonts, that will help the compatibility as well, especially when you're converting them to PDF before sending them to somebody. Sometimes the fonts follow along with the PDF as well. And if the software has to do font conversion, the operating system or the software you're using as the Office suite, then sometimes that's what causes those formatting issues. If you have the fonts in your system to begin with, no problem.
All right.
So just a compatibility tip.
Well, we
right,
have,
Kelly.
Well, we actually, yeah, we have about 5 minutes left, so can we, yeah, we can probably do this one. This is a short one. Okay.
Yeah, Kelly's is a short one. Provided some help for Al. I don't remember who Al is, but let's read on. Kelly says, I was listening to episode 234. I heard that Al was having problems printing from his laptop to the desktop. The printer is shared on the desktop. Well, I just worked on something like this a couple of weeks ago. My desk is getting cluttered, so I moved my printer, which was an HP 2300 LaserJet. It's old, but it works. I have a mix of OSs on my network. I have two Windows 7 machines, three Linux Mint 13 machines. I took a P4 install of Lubuntu onto it and shared the printer. I was getting all kinds of errors printing to it, so what I had to do was install Samba to the Lubuntu machine and set up a script in the smb.conf. I added this to my smb.conf and hope this helps. Mm. So he actually, in his email, provided the script. I didn't include it in the show notes. If somebody's interested in getting that script, send me an email, goinglinux@gmail.com, and I can send you the script. But it's quite short, and Samba works quite nicely for printers and compatibility issues around printers, so I'm not surprised.
All right, we have about 4 minutes left. You want to squeeze in Ken?
Sure. So Ken provided a tip for users of HP printers on our Google Plus forum. He writes, I had to update the HP LIP, which is the HP something Linux something printer interface thing. It's the driver that HP provides. For my HP M1217 NFW printer on my home Debian Wheezy box. Debian likes to name their distributions after Toy Story characters. I was going to try Debian backports, but found this link instead worked great on replacing and updating the HP LIP on my printer, and my printer works. The wizard supports many Linux distributions. We have a link in both the email and in the show notes to the HP site. And if you click on that link, it leads you through a wizard, five-step wizard. You pick your Linux distribution, the version you're using, the printer type. There goes my fax machine. Select a printer model, and then you click next and get the driver. It couldn't be easier.
All right. Well, Ken has a follow-up thing there you want to just do.
Okay, we got time for that too. Let's get back to the emails. Ken also posted a question about Canonical's recent announcement about their Ubuntu One service. Is Canonical's shutting down Ubuntu One the beginning of storage services pruning? Ubuntu One shutting down, a link to that article on the Canonical website from Ken. And Ken, it could well be that Canonical is pruning out some of its not-so-profitable offerings, Ubuntu One being one of them. Ubuntu One is a Dropbox-like, or was a Dropbox-like, file-sharing service provided by Canonical, the developers of the Ubuntu Linux operating system.
Actually,
they decided not to offer that anymore.
Sorry. Yeah, they did away with that. Yeah.
Yes, they did. I think you can continue to get your data off of it until sometime in June, but after June, it's gone. So go ahead and you know, quite frankly, since you probably have it synced to a folder on your computer, don't worry about it.
Exactly. Well, Larry, listen, we're almost out of time. So what's the next Going Linux podcast going to be about?
It's probably going to be a listener feedback episode, more emails, more good fun from the Google Plus community and answering people's questions, and hopefully.
All right. Well, for those of you who are watching us on live video stream, after we sign off, stay off. We'll have a little bit of an after show that we do on our Computer America live video portion. Larry, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the show tonight. Always a pleasure having you here. Again, yeah, absolutely. Again, go to computeramerica.com for and you can see all the things that we talked about tonight under our show notes button at Computer America. So that wraps it up. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman. Your hard disk never becomes floppy. See ya.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.